Well, hey there, come on in. We're just about to start. Welcome to My Wife the Dietitian, a fun weekly podcast about nutrition and healthy lifestyle. I'm Rob, and together with my wife Sandra, we invite you to join us on this informative and entertaining journey through the complex world of healthy eating.
Join us each week as we strive to help you with transforming your overall health and relationship with food through up-to-date, evidence-based nutrition information. Today, we're interviewing Dr. Wesley McWhorter, who is a chef, dietitian, behavior change specialist with a PhD in public health. His experiences have led him down the path of culinary medicine, where he and his team teach doctors and other healthcare professionals how to help patients make healthy food taste good.
We put people into categories and then we say, you can't do this, you can't do that. It just doesn't work well. It creates this framework for a negative relationship with food. And we know, again, there's plenty of space for all foods within a healthy dietary pattern. And I fundamentally disagree with many of the ways we've communicated health and food, and just changing that narrative is a really, I think, a well-needed and timely thing that we need to be pushing a little more for. So again, just let's get into the mindset of like, how can we support our patients in a positive light instead of a negative light? That makes a huge difference. And it also breaks down those stereotypes. It breaks down those, the wall that many of our patients have put up because they've been hurt with past experiences. You know, whether it be with a dietitian, a physician, nurse, etc.
Stay with us.
Welcome to My Wife, the Dietitian. Hello, Sandra.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Sandra.
We're interviewing Dr. Wesley McWhorter today.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it's so cool. He's presented over 500 talks in different forums, conferences,
wow,
and podcasts and different places. And he's an expert in culinary medicine, and he spearheads the Teaching Kitchen Collaborative.
Sounds interesting.
He teaches doctors and other healthcare professionals how to cook and how to make food taste good for their patients.
Yeah, it sounds like an interesting topic.
Yeah, it's really cool. And he also has a PhD in public health. So behavior change is part of what he talks about with his clients and with the healthcare professionals too, and how to help patients move towards healthier behaviors.
Nice. That's a pretty well-rounded background, hey?
Oh, yeah. He's a wealth of information and just so interesting. And he's passionate about the topic with a story of his own family. And that's the whole reason he became a dietitian and went through to do his PhD in public health. There's always a root story with most people's professions, and Wesley's no different. So yeah, it's really interesting to hear him talk about his journey.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, let's bring him on.
Wesley, thank you so much for joining us today. Could you tell the listeners who you are and who you help in your work?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, Sandra and Rob. Really, really appreciate the time to take out to chat with y'all today. So again, thanks for having me on. My name is Wesley McWhorter. I am a chef, dietitian, behavioral scientist, and I have the joy of working, my current role as vice president of lifestyle medicine at Suvita Healthcare, you know, a value-based company that, familiarity-wise, for the listeners, value-based care, but I'm sure we'll get into that a little later in the talk. But I lead the lifestyle medicine team, which includes physical therapy, nutrition, and then any of our community type programming. So what we term as lifestyle programming, which includes, you know, fitness classes, nutrition education, culinary medicine, all the things that, you know, bring people together to really improve their health. So a fun group to work with. We have locations throughout Texas, so Houston, Austin, Dallas, and then also in the Arizona market in Phoenix and Tucson. So wow. Yeah, that's a little bit about me, and where I'm working right now.
Right on.
Oh my God. And you have a doctor in public health. Is that right? Your doctorate?
Yes. Yeah. So I'll walk through all this if you all are fine with this. I'll walk through the education here for a little while. Sure. I was a culinary school person first, right? So out of high school, you know, me, like many other folks, had a family history of chronic conditions. Specifically for me, it was my paternal grandfather. He had a heart attack when I was, you know, again, I always go back and forth on what age I was when the first one happened. I should probably go look up the actual date. But the thing that I remember specifically is that, you know, after that heart attack occurring, me being over at my grandparents' house and hearing my grandmother really pushing my grandfather to eat that heart healthy diet that the doctor prescribed. And, you know, Boo, as we lovingly called him, was not happy about doing this. And when I say not happy, he pushed the plate across the table and was like, I'm not eating this. It's disgusting. You know, and like, it's so true. Like, you know, well, healthy food tastes bad. Like that's not a good thing, right? That's the mentality. So for me, then was, well, if I can make healthy food taste good, maybe I could help my grandfather. Right. He had a second event and passed away from the third. So, that inspired me to go to culinary school. I majored in nutrition, which wasn't really a big thing back then. And yeah, and then I did the chef world, got a private chef job, and that helped me pay for undergrad and master's. And then when I went back for my doctorate, they had built what we call a teaching kitchen, and they also had a teaching garden. So that was right up my alley, having experience with my family doing landscaping and gardening, and then also having the culinary skills to really come into the university, help grow that program, teach what we call culinary medicine and other food as medicine programming. And then from there, yeah, became a professor and, you know, worked as a professor for a few years, and then got poached by this startup company that I'm joining, you know, that I joined a few years ago, Sevita, and, enjoyed the ride.
Oh my God. Where's UT? What's UT?
Yeah. So University of Texas, now University of Texas has multiple campuses, right? I was specifically at University of Texas School of Public Health, which we are based. Our main campus is in Houston. We have campuses in Austin, Dallas, San Antonio, El Paso, and then down in the Rio Grande area. So multiple campuses. And then I was duly appointed at McGovern Medical School, which is the UT Medical School down in Houston. So I served in both universities or both schools within the university.
Oh, wonderful. My goodness. So, wow. And you mentioned that you are part of the culinary medicine. And I don't know if everybody knows what that means exactly. What is culinary medicine?
You know, it's funny because, you know, when you're talking to RDs, right, or, you know, lay audience, it makes sense to a lot of lay audiences, right? Like, okay, food does impact your health one way or the other, right? Like either you're consuming things that are improving your health, or you're consuming things that are harming your health. And culinary medicine is taking it away from what I would say, unfortunately, a lot of us have done, is that we've gotten too into the nutrition talk, where we only talk about things that are high level, like nutrients, and it gets to be confusing. Like, what am I actually supposed to do when I go to the grocery store?
Yeah.
I can't just buy calories. Like, I don't just pick calories off the shelf, you know, like what does food actually look like? Right. So with that, you know, it's taking it a step back, and like, by all means, any RD that's listening to this, we need our nutrition expertise, right? But we also need to know how to communicate in ways that make sense for our patients. As I mentioned earlier, like healthy food for most people is disgusting. They don't think it's delicious, right? So how do we challenge that narrative? And one way is through, you know, what we call culinary medicine, also called culinary nutrition, basically just hands-on nutrition education. So in any other, you know, whether you have, I don't know, chemistry or any other, you know, class, there's always a lab component, right? So viewing culinary medicine kind of in that point where you learn about, let's say we have a chronic condition like diabetes. Well, instead of just telling your patient, hey, here is the diabetes diet, or like my grandfather, here's a heart healthy diet. Well, what does that look like? You know, how do I prepare those foods? And then when my husband says it's disgusting, how can I change it to make it where he'll actually consume it? You know, in that again, like for my grandmother, if she had had that opportunity, perhaps that could have really improved that perspective. So culinary medicine, the reason the medicine part is in there is there's a lot of physicians involved, right? And this is an area where the RD can really work together and help lead this field, right? Where we're bringing together the food, the nutrition piece, working interprofessionally with our, you know, physician friends, our PAs, our nurses, dentist, et cetera, to help challenge, you know, the huge rising demand we're having, you know, huge rising, you know, rates of diabetes, obesity, et cetera. So that's a snippet of what it is.
Is this something you're teaching to patients, or you're teaching health professionals how to talk to patients, or like, where does the hands-on part come in?
Yeah. I mean, you know, looking historically, like the team out of Gold Ring Center for Culinary Medicine. So started, you know, with Tim Harlan, Leah Saris, down in at Tulane University. They're both, you know, Leah Saris is no longer there. And then Tim has moved up to GW, where the program's based out of now. That's one area. The Teaching Kitchen Collaborative, Health Meets, Healthy Kitchens, Healthy Lives with David Eisenberg, Teaching Kitchen Collaborative, another, you know, big leader in this field where, you know, pushing to say we have to have more practical nutrition education. And that starts with obviously the trainers, right? It starts with, you know, students. It starts with practicing RDs, with practicing physicians. And yes, it's part with the patients too. So
right.
Across the board for at UT, our model was, you know, let's train our students. And then we also had programming where we would bring in, you know, existing, you know, RDs that didn't have that opportunity, right? Like the only kitchen activities they have were, you know, here's a cookie and what happens with baking soda and what happens without baking soda, you know, which is like, that's cool. But like, that doesn't teach me how to make food that works for my patient. Like, and that's, right. I'm not saying that RDs don't have food skills, because many of us do, right? But the translation often is a missed piece. And that's where, you know, you can see we've published, you know, when I say we, me and several of my RD colleagues and the folks have published probably 7-8 papers in the past few years arguing for including this more along our profession, you know, within the requirements, because it's so important. It's such a positive movement right now. It's such a positive experience for patients. So, you know, having these classes, whether it be, and Rob, I'll get to answer your question here. Sorry, it's a very long-winded answer, but
no worries.
Okay.
That, you know, all the pieces of, you know, training the trainer, training the existing folks, and then also training patients. And, you know, what that looks like is you come into, you know, a kitchen, we say, okay, here's some dishes we're going to be preparing, you know, and this is how you do it. And we taste it, we try it, we talk about how you can fit this in your own life. We include, you know, different discussion points, more facilitated discussion points where people can walk through these issues. We also do this where it's fully virtual, right? So via Zoom or, you know, other virtual platform where I'm cooking along with a patient and, you know, they're in their own home with their kids or their loved ones, you know, experiencing it at their house, sharing a meal, you know, with us and with their family. So it really is a way to make it where, you know, I'm not just getting information, but yes, I am doing it. And the example we use a lot of times, right? And you could use a sports one, right? You and I, we talked about kiteboarding, right? You could watch kiteboarding on TV and then go and try to do it. But, you know, it's going to be really hard to do it without actually practicing, right? So the same thing is like you can watch driving, you can watch someone drive a car on TV, but if you don't actually practice it, it's going to be really difficult to actually learn that skill set. So the hands-on piece is, you know, the experiential learning is huge for our patient population to really improve their health.
And yeah, Wesley, I remember in another podcast, you had mentioned it's like when your baby is taking their first steps. Like if a person has been eating their same way for like 50, 60 years, and they haven't really thought about like how to make food taste healthy or have flavor.
Yep.
And you're teaching them these skills. It's not like the baby getting up and running. It's the baby having their first steps and like all the little types of little tweaks to make things change in their day-to-day behavior to help with improving their nutrition and improving their food intake. Is that kind of a good analogy of like, the change doesn't happen overnight. It's like a series of steps.
You know, it'd be beautifully said, right? I mean, I think we can wrap it up and say we're done here. That is a wonderful summary. It's like, you know, like we have this assumption that I have the right way. Here's the answer. If you just did A, B, and C, then you would would get healthy. Well, that's great, grand, and wonderful, but we know human behavior is so much more complex than that, right? And it takes failure, and it takes multiple failures, and not failure combined with shame. And that's what often like folks have experienced that have a chronic condition. So let's just say you're 65 years old, you're patient with diabetes, you probably have, you know, multiple comorbidities as well, say high blood pressure, heart disease as well. When you go to the doctor, is that a positive experience for you? I would argue 99.9%. It's not. It's a shame-filled experience where, well, you didn't control this. You've gained an additional 7 pounds. Your blood levels are here and there. Why aren't you doing better? And there's a lot of finger wagging, a lot of shaming, a lot of making people feel bad. But what I always asked my students, whether it be medical students, nutrition students, et cetera, is that, do you think any of your patients want to be sick? And clearly the answer is no. If the patient does want to be sick, well, then we have a mental health issue. So when you flip it and you say, well, if the patient doesn't want to be sick, how can we empower that patient to improve their health? And one way not to do that is shaming someone. Another way not to do that is expecting perfection after the first try. So what we tell people a lot, like you said, is, you know, you have kids, they're learning to walk. It takes a lot of time to figure out how to do it. There's a lot of stumbles. So how do you get in there and support them and celebrate them? And that's creating the space to say, hey, try this. Okay. You don't like kale. Well, that's okay. There's plenty of other dark leafy greens. Or you don't like Brussels sprouts. Maybe they were boiled. They weren't cooked properly. Let's try another way to do it. Or you don't like this spice or this flavor profile. That's great. Let's find something else. So there's always another way we can help someone navigate to get them to where they need to be. And it takes time. And that's part of what, you know, human behavior is that it's not an overnight thing. If that same 67-year-old patient, you know, if we asked, well, how long have they been eating food? The answer is like 66 years and 6 months. That's many years of behavior to change, right? And it's not an overnight success. It's walking along with those patients to really get them where they need to be. And that's the beauty from my perspective of why I love being in a kitchen space, is because it takes away that punishment mentality and turns it into celebration. If you're a dietitian, you know how it feels to be the diet police, and you don't see success when you're in that space. If you can flip that and you can be celebrating food and celebrating enjoyment and pleasure, it completely changes the narrative. And not only does it completely change the narrative, but you actually get honest answers, because, you know, what people end up doing, you know, as far as food, is they end up eating the things that they love. So if we can start celebrating what enjoyment, what pleasure is, then we can start seeing better results long term. So that, you know, for a long-winded answer on the behavior side, is it's really taking the love of food and really talking about it and celebrate it, instead of saying, oh, well, you got to see the dietitian. Guess what? It's punishment. I'm going to take everything away that you love. No, we're actually going to, as RDs know, we don't do that. We're actually going to embrace and celebrate, but it's really a space where you can, you know, let that live in the kitchen.
Oh, nice. Totally. One of my favorite quotes is, food is the language of nutrition.
Yep. I love that. I might steal that one from you. Anybody listen to this, don't tell.
Yeah.
It's so true, though. I mean, I remember as a young dietitian, like when I was first starting out, we do learn so much about nutrients and fiber and vitamins, minerals, the macros, all that. And then, you know, you see in like diet culture is like all about like, well, take this protein powder, add this protein to your smoothie, like just constantly all about just the macros. And it's like, no, food, get back to food. We don't eat calories. Like you said, we don't go to the grocery store and pick calories off the shelf. We go to the produce section, we go to the grocery store, the farmer's market, and food is the language of nutrition. That's where we're going to get all the good nutrients. And it makes us feel good. We're human. We're not the Jetsons. We don't need to have a plate of supplements for breakfast and a plate of supplements for lunch and dinner. We want to eat food. And we know, like you said, it can, you know, what we eat matters. And what we eat impacts our health. So those are your quotes. I've taken those from other episodes that you've done.
I appreciate it, because, you know, I mean, making me feel good here. But also, like, you know, I think that same conversation with your patients, right? Like, when you tell someone, you create the freedom for someone to celebrate their culture and their food, it's powerful. I mean, there is so much shame around nutrition. It's insane. Like if you just read literature, you read, I mean, again, I'm an epi major just as much as the next, you know, doctoral person as well. So I'm not hating on all, you know, epi studies, but we put people into categories and then we say, you can't do this, you can't do that. It just doesn't work well. It creates this framework for a negative relationship with food. And we know, again, there's plenty of space for all foods within a healthy dietary pattern. And I fundamentally disagree with many of the ways we've communicated health and food. And just changing that narrative is a really, I think, a well-needed and timely thing that we need to be pushing a little more for. So again, just let's get into the mindset of like, how can we support our patients in a positive light instead of a negative light? That makes a huge difference. And it also breaks down those stereotypes. It breaks down those, the wall that many of our patients have put up because they've been hurt with past experiences, you know, whether it be with a dietitian, a physician, nurse, et cetera.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, what part of the work I do local grocery tours with all ages. So I take grade 4 kids into the grocery store with their class, right? And they do a scavenger hunt. And, you know, we obviously look at the produce and the bright colors. And we talk about these are the glow foods because they have phytochemicals and they have, you know, antioxidants and they make our skin glow like the beta carotene, but they actually taste really good. It's Mother Nature's candy. You know, like these are the really yummy foods. And then I engage them like, what do you put in your smoothie? And they're like, we put banana and strawberries in our smoothie every morning. And it's so cool because they're actually learning about nutrition. They're learning that the food that is at the grocery store is the food that actually helps them feel good or run faster or grow. You know, we talk about the grow foods with the protein ones and then the go foods with the whole grains and the different, you know, carbohydrates. If people like to call them carbohydrates. So it's all those different, you know, just to like get it back to, you know, this is what we eat and it helps our body thrive and we can make it taste good and, you know, be part of the, you know, add your food to the list, the grocery list and pick out a new vegetable that you've never tried in your house before. And then, you know, look up recipes and figure out what to do with them. And like, just things like that to like get them thinking about it. Just that Jamie Oliver, when he went into the, you know, like, and I think it was like New York City into one of the grade 4 classes and showing the kids like, what is this? It's a tomato, right? And nobody knew. They're like, I don't know. Is it? And they said all these other things. And then he said, do you guys eat French fries? Oh yeah, we eat French fries. Yeah. Do you use ketchup? Yeah. We use ketchup. Well, that's what this is made, you know, ketchup is made from tomatoes. And then they make the connection. So it's kind of like, you know, you pull the carrot from the ground and this is the connection of like food grows from the earth and we eat it and it can taste good and we don't have to have like all these supplements and like, you know, it's just, it's like bringing it back to just basics.
That, you know, it feels that way a lot of times of like, what I'm talking about is not novel at all. Like, you know, whenever we're writing papers, it's like this novel idea. And I'm like, it's not novel. I don't know why. Why is this? Why did one of the co-authors put this? It's not novel. This is just food, right? Like this is as basic as it can be. But the problem is that we've gotten so far away from it that I guess it has become novel. Your point of like the fourth graders with Jamie Oliver not knowing food. I mean, this was the experience of medical students. Remember the first culinary medicine class I taught. For medical students, I'm you know, I have cauliflower, I had garlic, and they're like, "What is that? What are you using?" And I'm like, "What? Was this a joke?" Like I'm confused, right? Like I don't know if these kids are just trying to pull one over on me. I'm confused here, but no, like the basics are very much left out, right? So how do we circle back to that when our future physicians, our future, you know, dietitians just as much don't understand food. They understand the nutrition side. They understand the process in the body, but they don't really understand the practicality of it. That's when we can't, you know, we're missing that piece. It becomes a huge problem for that translation because, you know, if you view it in another light, it would be like, you know, knowing how to program an iPhone or something like that, right? Like, you know, all the back stuff, but you don't really know how to use the apps. And vast majority of your consumer could care less about the programming pieces. They just want their phone to work. So when we're communicating in like, you know, code, that's very difficult for the average consumer to understand. So I'm a big believer of keeping it simple, really focusing on what our patients want and need. And yes. Also, to this point, is that what do you start with? You know, I mentioned earlier, there's a very negative perception, just, you know, systematically, you know, in the US, specifically for the US, about healthy food. And I always ask patients and people, hey, what do you think of when you hear healthy food? Like, what comes to mind? You know, and people will say vegetables, this, that, and then I'll say, okay, well, you know, like, how does it make you feel, right? And most of the answers I get out of this are like, basically, it's a sad salad, right? It's something that's not enjoyable, and I'm not excited about it. So As a dietitian, you're countering, anytime you walk in the door, your patient is like, oh, here's a sad salad guy. Here's a sad salad lady. So I have to challenge that. And how do I challenge that? It's not by telling people it has a lot of vitamin C, right? Like, that's great, but I really care, does this taste good? Because that's what's going to motivate me to eat it, not that it's healthy for me. I know vegetables are good for me, right? But how can I actually work for it, you know, make it work for my family? How can I make it not take 2 hours to prepare? How can I make it less expensive? And then maybe I'll care about the nutrition. And one of the ways I teach students about this is like, you know, anyone that's, you know, in a relationship, whether they're married or not married, they usually didn't propose on the first date, right? They didn't say, hey, will you marry me, after just getting to know their loved one. Right. They might have, you know, gotten to know their loved one, you know, a few more times and then propose. And the same thing goes for, you know, when we're talking about nutrition, bring that up later, right? That comes up later. The first part that we talk about is the enjoyment, the pleasure, and the taste of food. And once that is accomplished, that's really when we dive deep into, this is the healthy portion. This is why it's so good for you. So it's not that, like, as dietitians, that it's not important. It's just simply the timing of when you talk about it. So that's a big thing that I like to discuss with RDs that are currently practicing, or folks that don't have that exposure yet to culinary medicine, is kind of flipping the script and starting with flavor first.
I like that.
Oh, I like.
Yeah, I like the preventative approach to all of this too. Like, it's taking the whole healthcare and like, there's definitely the preventive approach, especially with the team you're working on. And then the teaching aspect too. I know I've done a lot of teaching, and I've recognized sort of the pros and cons of teaching, and good teachers are able to give you an alternative, and they'll keep giving you alternatives until you get it. And you were mentioning with food, you know, like you said, if you don't like the boiled Brussels sprouts, let's try something different. You know, you don't write Brussels sprouts off just because you didn't like them that one way. And so giving people the tools and the understanding to try things differently. And I really like what you just said too, about how the nutrition comes down the road or comes later. And, you know, let's make food taste good. Because if it doesn't taste good, the nutrition's irrelevant. Like, if you're not even going to get it,
you
got
to eat
mouth
it for it to be healthy, right? Exactly. If you're not eating it, like, doesn't matter how healthy your diet is.
You got it. Yeah. So I really like that approach. That's and having dietitians and medical professionals, healthcare professionals, understand that it is more than just the chemistry, more than just talking about protein and carbs and fat and all that, because that's kind of where it's going. It's, I don't know when it shifted or why, but talking about nutrition now is like a science class, and it's like, where's the food? Like, you know, it's, I'm waiting for all the grocery stores to be like, the aisles to be labeled as protein and carbs. And do you know what I mean?
Oh my gosh, you're right.
It's confusing for people.
It is. And what that does, unfortunately, and this is not to, I'm not hating on companies. Don't get me wrong here, but what we do is then advertising goes that route. And then what the average consumer do is they purchase things based on the advertising instead of the real food. Right.
Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, I need this. So I'll just go look at the package and see what tells me that that's what it is, instead of understanding, well, what actually makes up that, and why, like, why is that important?
That's
and there's
right.
so much more freedom when you get to that space too.
That's right. And Mother Nature has no budget for advertising vegetables and fruits, right? It's just the boring old message that everybody knows from their grandmother, you know? And it's like, I want to write a book that says, you want to eat clean, get dirty in your grandma's garden.
Yeah. And it's true. You know, like the red cabbage, purple cabbage, whichever color, I'm kind of colorblind, so they look the same to me, red, purple, whatever color it is. You know, that's like one of the highest antioxidant vegetables out there. And it's also like one of the least expensive, you know, you can buy it, you know, this January, it'll still be good in your refrigerator next January. But you know, it doesn't have an advertising budget, like you said. So how do we get that communication out there? And, you know, it's unfortunate, you know, not to get into the politics of this too much, but like, you know, healthy food you shouldn't make a decision on healthy food based on how expensive it is. That's so unfortunate that, you know, vast majority of the patients I've worked with in my career, that's where they are, right? I would love to do this, but I can't afford this, right? Mm-hmm. This sounds great, but I don't have access to a grocery store. So within that space, and really a lot of what the work we do is that, like, you know, if someone hears me talking about culinary medicine, they're like, well, yeah, that's great, man. But like, how do I do that for my family? And that's where we really, you know, in our clinical site and then a lot of other spaces I've worked with, we do, you know, food prescription. And food prescription is not to say like we're prescribing exactly what you should eat. It's going on a play for words, just like food as medicine is. We're not saying food is a replacement for medicine. It's just that food has the power to heal and harm. So eating more of certain foods will be much better for you. And that's where we can help balance out those, you know, those non-medical drivers of health, social determinants of health that are leading to a lot of these chronic conditions. So as I go back and earlier in this talk, how we said that, you know, our patients don't want to be sick. That's true, right? Our patients don't want to be sick, but also how do we help our patient afford certain things? And that's, you know, can we do a food prescription? Can we do a partnership with our food bank, get these foods delivered to their home, operate a food pharmacy out of our clinic? That's the space where we're in. So we take it a step further. We don't stop with just a, you know, what you would assume as a typical food distribution, but we do that hands-on education piece, the culinary medicine piece, where we're demonstrating, you know what, you might not have ever used Brussels sprouts, or you might not know how to handle this certain kind of squash. Well, here's some recipes for it. Here's a way to do it. Try it, taste it, see if you like it. What would you do different, et cetera, et cetera. So again, we have to stand by our patients and advocate to improve those spaces that they can have access to.
Right on.
Oh, I like that. Is that with that value-based care when you said that at the start?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, you know, food is medicine, you know, food prescriptions definitely occurring outside of the value-based care space. So most of what you would see food prescriptions occurring in are safety net hospitals, right? And the reason, if you really boil it down, is it's money. I mean, let's be frank. If you have a patient that has uncontrolled diabetes and you aren't doing any preventative work, the likelihood of that patient ending up in the ER for that is super high. And the cost for ending up in the ER is much higher than if you had a food prescription, if you had visits with the dietitian. So what a lot of your safety net hospitals started to see is that this is costing a lot of money. We should do other interventions that we know work. And you know, providing healthy food is one way to work. You know, having a visit with a dietitian is definitely one way to work. Having culinary medicine classes is definitely, you know, a positive experience. So, and not only is it the cost savings, but for your patient, right? It impacts their health. It helps change, you know, where the patient can have some of the control in their own hands to improve their health. And that's, so it, we've seen a lot of success, a lot of positive measures on that side. So for me, joining in a value-based care company, and for value-based care, those of you that don't know, the rationale here is that, you know, a company would be on the hook for a patient, whether they're healthy or not, right? So if a patient has conditions, there's a certain amount of monies that insurance companies will pay for said patient, right? And, if you keep that patient healthy, you improve their health. Guess what? You're going to make money in a business setting. If that patient stays sick and has to have additional things, procedures, et cetera, you will lose money. So the way, you know, Medicare versus Medicare Advantage works is, you know, Medicare Advantage will provide, you know, say 90 cents on the dollar for the average 65-year-old patient with certain conditions. If a Medicare Advantage company can, you know, keep that patient healthy, well, then they will save money and they'll make money on their side. And Medicare will make money as well. They'll save money by having reduced overall expenses. So if you view nutrition and why nutrition is important in a value-based care company is that the vast majority of chronic conditions are very strongly correlated, not saying they're directly caused, but very strongly correlated with what we consume or don't consume. So it behooves companies, you know, whether it be, you know, Sevita, many other companies that are similar, to really focus on preventative measures, which includes nutrition, physical activity, et cetera.
Wow.
That's awesome.
So interesting. What a great way to flip the script, you know, like just change things around so that actually the companies are saving money and making money when people are healthy. Like that is, I
love
that.
Instead of just number of procedures, right? Which that's our current sick care process. We're incentivized to do, I mean, I'm not incentivized. Well, why would I want to have an RD on the team if I, in a traditional setting, right? There's really no benefit to me because I'm not making money that way. And I'm saying the making money because, you know, I live in Texas. There's both sides of the political aisle. I was a researcher, so I very much vehemently believe this is the right thing to do, right? But also you have to make business case for things to be successful long-term and not just be grant funded.
Right.
So to do that, you know, you have to illustrate there's a business case. And there is a business case on both sides because, again, it is the right thing to do. And second, it makes money and saves money, which is very important for a healthcare system to be successful. So, you know, basic sick care where we're just doing fee for service, we're incentivized to do procedures and do as many of them as we can, not to keep our patients healthy. And that is a huge problem if we're not incentivized to keep our patients healthy. So if we can flip that again and say, what can we do to have, you know, Mrs. Lopez, you know, Mrs. McWhorter be healthy, we're going to do those things because it'll be successful for the patients and also it'll be successful for the bottom line.
True. I like that. And I like that. I mean, it's a win-win-win. If you think about it, it's helping the business on both sides and it's helping the patient, you know, which is really the most important aspect. But, you know, if the business benefits in the process, then that, like you said, keeps them incentivized to keep pushing in that direction, which is great.
Yeah. And to add two more thoughts to this here, you know, if y'all are familiar with the recent White House conference on nutrition that occurred about a year and a half ago, that was really inspired and pushed by, you know, two colleagues, you know, a senator and out of Texas and a congressman out of Massachusetts, Democrat and Republican, right? That both said, this doesn't make sense that we're not having nutrition education in our medical schools, that we're not doing enough preventative measures. So we need to get together. We need to push to make this change. So again, it's looking at from taking a step outside, maybe from your own, you know, area of belief and saying, how can we as a, you know, as a nation do a better job, right? Where we can make foods more affordable. We can make, you know, nutrition important from our medical doctor to our medical doctors to, you know, the entire healthcare system, not just the dietitian. Which if you're an RD and you're saying, you know, Wesley, you're just going to educate physicians to take our jobs. That's absolutely not at all what we're doing. We're actually informing physicians and other practitioners of what we do and how we do it well. Because if someone doesn't know, you know, what you do for a living, it's going to be kind of hard to work with them. So interprofessional work is massively needed to improve, you know, the scope of health in our country, especially related to chronic conditions. So it is a beautiful area right now to be diving into as a dietitian to really spend time working together with your colleagues in the healthcare space.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. Like it's such a important aspect of healthcare, you know, what it's mostly sick care, which you explained, yep. And to go upstream and help people upstream and get people all on board that if they can get healthier with just their, yeah, you know, lifestyle changes day to day, then that can be preventative and it's proactive in terms of their own health. And yeah, it's wow, it's such a huge topic and it's
maybe for a few more podcasts potentially, I don't know.
Oh yeah. It'd be great. We'd love that. That'd be good. Be good to do it on site in between a kiteboard session, right?
I would be down for that.
Yeah,
for sure.
Right on.
Absolutely. No, but culinary medicine, that is such a, I think it's a cutting edge kind of term that's going to grow, yeah. I imagine, like, because it's more, it used to be that nutrition, like I've been a dietitian for 26 years now, and mm-hmm. and it was kind of fringe. Like, you know, when, you know, you come out of school and you're a dietitian in different settings and it's like, oh, what do you do? And oh, you just go take the diet order, you know, like just the little simple.
You're dietary and you deliver food. That's right. That's what you do, right?
Yeah.
Yep, that's all I do.
Yeah. You wear a hairnet and you sit at the lunch line. And no offense to anybody that does that, but that was the summary, right?
It's totally. That's all we do. Exactly. Oh, and now it's like, oh, you're a dietitian? Well, I need a weight loss plan, please. And I don't want to cook food. So make it easy. Like I'll get protein powder, whatever you want me to get. It's like, oh my God.
Just do everything for me. Let me not think about it.
Exactly. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I'll coach you and mentor you and have you talk to me so I can be your accountability coach when you're going through this change, because that's what it is. You got to do the work. You got to start to learn how to cook and make food taste good. And I'll give you lots of easy hacks, like the, you know, putting a lot of veggies on the cookie tray and roasting them and then have them for the week in your grain bowls and, you know, different things like that, right? I'm sure you guys do all that, in the teaching labs.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of it is just skill building, right? It's just giving people the time to practice without like any repercussion, right? So if, you know, I say, hey, Rob, you're going to have to cook healthy food for your family, you know, go spend all your own money on this and try it. And you go home and you cook and it's a disaster. Your wife, your kids, whoever, they hate it. Well, you're out $40 and all your family's mad at you. Yeah, but if you can come to a class, it doesn't cost you anything. You can try it. You can fail and then learn, well, actually, if I tried this, then there's success. Guess what? You're way more likely to try that at home with your family. Mm-hmm. So it's creating space, and we shouldn't, and going back to this, we really shouldn't have to do that. It should be affordable to just have healthy food, but it's not, right? It's difficult for a lot of people. So we really have to make that space for people to try, to fail, and then to see success.
Yeah. And so, you know, often teaching one skill is like, okay, here's a different way you can cook. You can take that skill and apply it to, you know, 10, 12 different things, and, you know, it spreads.
And one cool thing too, I'm a big proponent of group classes, because a lot of times what you see is that, like, you know, people actually learn more from their colleague than they do from me, you know, like the other two or three other people in the class have tried something that actually is better suggestion than what I'm suggesting, right? They have the same lived experiences. Most folks are similar age. So there is actually great advice that's being shared that you wouldn't get if it was just a one-on-one visit between, you know, me kind of talk, you know, like the typical thing of like talking to a patient versus like working with a patient. So we always view like our classes as like a round table where there's not one person that's more important, their opinion's more important. Yeah. It's more facilitating and bringing up discussion to really help solve these problems.
Oh, absolutely. I always say, like, I learn something in every group, even if it's a grade 4 class. I seriously learn something from them. Like, it's amazing. And it's a dialogue and a, you know, a conversation. So it's not like me, like the food police, like you said. It's basically it's learning. And if that's how people get excited about things too, is they are being asked for their input and their feedback and what do they like, and, you know, because everybody's got a different background, like culturally, and different foods that they grew up with, different experiences around the dinner table, and it all plays a role in how you eat as an adult. And it's so interesting. So that's part of the role as a dietitian too, is just bringing all that out and trying to help people just to get past some of the possible trauma they had when they were growing up. Like if their mother brought them to Weight Watchers and they didn't, you know, they had to watch everything they put in their mouth, like from day one. Like it's like, I think there's just so much misinformation and just there's so many mixed messages out there that people are like, they just are so confused and don't know what to do and what to eat. So this is bringing it back. I like that. It's just back to like food is the language of nutrition.
Yes, I love it. Food is the language of nutrition. You'll be seeing me quoting that in many spaces. I'll try to give credit, but probably not. You know, it's just going to steal that one.
Nice. It's okay. I stole it from someone else. I can't remember who.
Well, whoever came up with a really great idea, I mean, to be frank. And that and I know we're joking here, but it's so true, right? I mean, it's nutrition doesn't have to be that complicated. Yes, we can get into like, there's you know, cases and issues outside of that bell curve that are very complex. But for the vast majority of folks, it's really just like, what's on your plate? You know, like, what are there any vegetables there? You know, like if 90% of adults in the U.S. aren't eating enough vegetables, well, I mean, that seems like a pretty good place to start. If we can improve that area, then we can see some positive success.
Yeah,
so, I don't try to overly simplify, but also I think there's a lot of simplification that we can do in the nutrition world to make it where it's more consumable, more enjoyable, and more doable for our patients.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I totally agree. So there's a question that we ask all of our guests at the end here, and I want to ask you, and I think I sent it to you, so you had a heads up in thinking about it, but when you're going to a family gathering or a potluck, what dish would you bring?
Yeah, so if it's specifically family, right? I'm going to be honest, like my family growing up, we didn't eat a lot of vegetables, right? We grew up around vegetables. We didn't eat a lot of them. So if I bring in what I call a healthy dish, then most folks are going to be like, yeah, no thanks. So I like to do what what Jamie Oliver taught to the fourth graders about, like, do you eat French fries? And everyone's like, of course I do. Well, vast majority of people like French fries. And what can we do with a vegetable that tastes similar to a French fry? Not saying it's the same thing, but has that same crispy texture and salty flavor. And that's roasting vegetables. So I roast vegetables. I roast them hard. I put a lot of seasoning on the stuff and I try that out. That's one way to really get people to enjoy and start trying veggies. I don't say, hey, here's a healthy dish. I just bring it in, make sure it's got good seasoning on it, a dipping sauce, whatever it might be, but a good mixture of veggies. So typically that'll be something like, sweet potatoes, mixed with Brussels sprouts, maybe some onion in there too, to get some nice pop of flavor. But that's one of my favorite things to do for folks that just, hey, this is a new thing. I haven't eaten healthy food in a long time. As far as like other dishes where it's just like a party and stuff, I'm all over the place. And yeah, you could give me 3 months of warning for this question. I probably still wouldn't have a good answer for you. because I just really like food, right? So I'm always like, well, what else is being made? I'm going to make this and do that. But I've always been, again, since culinary school, been a big, like as a chef, when I was a private chef, I focused my dishes on the vegetables on the plate. So kind of more of like a protein flip where you see, like, typically US, you have very large quantity of, animal protein. I just flipping that, still having that flavor, because I think there's so much beautiful flavor there, but helping that kind of more impact the veggies. So a lot of my dishes are always, mapping that out. So whether I'm, smoking fruit and getting some pop out of something, or, whatever it might be, there's always a mixture of what I might bring. So I don't have one dish is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. So sorry for the bad answer.
That's awesome. It's great.
Did you say smoking fruit?
Yes. So add a little, pecan flavor, smoke to some apples or some peaches, to help things pop. Yeah. There's so many fun ways you can prepare vegetables.
Oh, dope.
On the grill, roasting, adding heat, pickling, quick pickling. There's a ton of things that we just don't really do from a culinary perspective, for the average cook out there, especially in the nutrition world, that I think we're just missing out. Like, there's so many beautiful flavors to try and to test and to do.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds so good. Oh my goodness. We're going to definitely go visit Wesley on our road trip, Rob, one day.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Definitely. And we actually have a cookbook. When I was at UT, we wrote a cookbook called How Good Food Works. So that's always one to, if you want to, check that one out too. It provides funds for students at the university. No money's being taken from me or other authors, but it was a fun way to kind of share and celebrate some recipes.
Yeah, fun.
A lot of resources online too from other folks. I know with grants I've gotten, we would always push for them to be available to everybody. So things on YouTube to show, hey, this is how you roast a vegetable. Here's some different examples of that. Again, there's a lot of things out there. I would just encourage everybody to try, right? And then if you fail, just try again.
Exactly.
That's the worst that can happen. You try again.
You got
totally.
It.
Oh my God. Let's put some of those in the show notes, Rob.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Is there any other links you want to share or contact information for yourself or anything like that?
Oh man, off the top of my head, I'm blanking on anything to share with y'all, but I can obviously share after this anything that comes to mind. I apologize.
Yeah, no problem.
Come prepared with any links on my mind.
It's all good. It's all good. No, that sounds good. So a quick summary with the culinary medicine, it includes the cooking skills. It helps with, there's some nutrition education that goes along with the cooking aspect of the food. The disease prevention and management. So what we eat matters, and it could be healing or harming us. So to try to get that balance, like just looking what's on the plate, what do you put in your grocery cart? Like all those aspects when we're looking at someone's health and nutrition and behavior change takes time. So it's like, it's not going to change overnight, and just having a few tweaks like day to day of little things, like you said, just adding a vegetable in your lunchtime, which a lot of people don't include, like just little things like that can actually improve your health over time. Like if you, a small change times time equals big changes, right, in your health. So yeah, my goodness, what a
that was a great summary, actually. Yes, perfect summary. Thank you.
Sandra's a good note taker.
Yes,
yeah. I've been taking like copious amounts of notes.
Maybe a skill I can learn a little better, because when I take notes, I'm like, what did I write? I don't even know what this says. So
I can't read what she wrote, but she understands it. So
I don't understand my own notes, which is a problem. So I have to type them. Always have to type them.
That's awesome. Oh my goodness, Wesley, this has been such a pleasure. I'm so glad that we were able to connect with you and get you on the show and just pick your brain, because, oh wow, it's just a wealth of information there. And I love the practical aspect of what you do and how you teach dietitians and physicians and other healthcare professionals. And you're basically changing how it works in the healthcare system. I think it's such an important move.
I would say one correction, not just me. There's a lot of folks in this world, and I have the pleasure of working with a lot of really wonderful, wonderful people to make some change. So
yeah,
pushing to improve it, right?
Definitely. And you've spoken, I think, over 500 different times with presentations, podcast interviews like this, and just your message, like the translation of the nutrition and the culinary and the behavior change and then like all of those things into a simple message that's like easy, digestible, and understandable for the consumer. I think that's such a huge part of it. Like you said, there's so many scientists talking such high level that it doesn't translate to what do I put in my grocery cart? And so I'm so happy that you are doing the work you're doing, because I think you're definitely in the right field. It's like your calling, and it sounds like you're passionate about it. So really appreciate of that.
Yeah. And again, thank you all for having me on. Really appreciated chatting with y'all. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming out today, Wesley. It was good. Good to hear what you had to say. And like Sandra said, thank you for doing what you do. It's hopefully, things are moving in that direction, because I think that's what we need. So yeah, much appreciated.
I appreciate it. Yeah. And I would say, moving in that direction is definitively happening. I mentioned, and I'll keep this short, but when I went to culinary school early 2000s, nutrition and culinary did not match. The fact that we now have, chefs being hired in medical schools illustrates how that change has occurred. So definitely moving in the right direction. I would encourage anybody that's listening, whether you're an RD or, non-professional, to really push for your practitioners to offer this to you, because this is a great service. It's something that can help make things a lot more understandable, easy to digest, as we said a few times, but just really put it in practical layman terms that's worthwhile for you and your family.
Yeah, it sounds like the right direction. So that's good to hear.
Well, thank you all for having me on.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Oh, I really appreciate that last bit too. And yeah, thanks so much, Wesley. We'll definitely have you back on the show.
Sounds great. Happy to.
All right. Okay. Take care.
That was really awesome, eh?
Yeah, he's a fun guy.
Yeah. I like that quote, food is the language of nutrition.
Well, that was your quote. It's his quote now, apparently.
Well, no, that was such a great interview. And I mean, that kind of wraps it all up. Like just that quote is so powerful.
Yeah, it kind of sums everything up. I like how passionate he is too, and that he kind of came about it naturally. You know, like you hear his story. I love hearing stories like that too, where you kind of look at where someone is in life. And I love asking people that question. It's like, how did you get to where you are now? And it's always interesting, you know, and his story, and it involves so many facets of the industry, you know, like he's a chef, he's a dietitian, he's into the behavior science part of it. You know, like there's so many different parts, but they all make sense once you hear the story.
Yeah. And how it affected him so personally with his grandfather and why he got into the field in the first place. Like it's just, you know, that's always, you know, you ask the why, like the reasons that you get up in the morning to do whatever you do. And that's his why. And it's just so.
Well, it's so personal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's personal for sure. And it's, like I said, it makes the story that much more authentic and valuable in a way, you know, like.
Oh yeah. So good. It was great. And he's just so interesting and well-spoken.
Yeah. Lots of great stats and information. So really enjoyed talking to him today. So if you want more information about Wesley, we'll add some links in the show notes you can check. You can also check our website too. There's some new things that we've added on there. Our website is mywifethedietitian.com. And if you feel like sending us a message through our email, you can do that as well. That's mywifetherd@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube. We have our podcast on YouTube, so it's always an option for how to listen to the podcast. We're not just on the podcast player. So for those that haven't checked the YouTube, we have all our episodes there. So you can listen straight from YouTube if that's something you'd prefer to do.
Yeah, I think that's why we put it on YouTube, because I think it's a different audience going to YouTube versus people that listen to podcasts. So
it totally is. Yeah. So there you go. And don't forget to rate and review the show. Like we say every week, it helps keep things going for us here. It brings new people to the show. And we just like to hear your feedback too. It lets us know that we're on the right track. So we appreciate any feedback you can give us through the review or ratings. Is that everything, Sandra?
Yeah, we have lots of speakers lined up and guest interviews in the upcoming months. It's exciting.
Yeah, lots coming up. So yeah, stay tuned. We will be back on Wednesday with Nutrition Nuggets, and then again next week with a full episode. So in the meantime, have a great week, everyone. Thanks for joining us today on My Wife the Dietitian. If you like what you heard, don't be shy. Leave us a comment or review, and be sure to share our podcast with your friends. If you'd like to hear more, hit that subscribe button. You can also follow us on our social media pages for updates, episode trailers, and other odds and ends. For more info and links on what we discussed on today's episode, check the show notes. We'll be back next week with another informative and fun-filled episode. Thank you.